The Supreme Court term begins hearing cases the first Monday in October, but court watchers have been busy lately, waiting for the court to issue the last opinions of the term, including one that may have far-reaching impact in the world of class actions, Walmart stores versus Dukes. Both federal and state rules allow named individuals to sue on behalf of a class of unnamed plaintiffs if certain requirements are met. Whether a case is an individual action or a class action is not merely procedural. Since the 1960s, the class action lawsuit has transformed the U.S. judicial system. Because litigation costs are so high, many legitimate claims are simply too small to warrant filing and never see the inside of a courtroom. However, if hundreds or thousands of claims can be brought at the same time, like products liability claims or securities fraud claims, then attorneys will have an incentive to bring the case forward for a contingent fee. On the other hand, defendants argue that many class actions are frivolous, but that the prospect of paying a judgment multiplied by every member of the class pressures them into settling the claims, with the bulk of the settlement going to opportunistic lawyers, not plaintiffs. In the past two decades, Congress has moved to curb class actions, first with the Private Securities Lawsuit Reform Act, then the Class Action Fairness Act. And the courts have also restricted the use of the class action. Earlier this term, the Supreme Court upheld a consumer contract in AT&T versus Concepcion that effectively waived the consumer's right to bring a class action or class arbitration. In Walmart, the Supreme Court continued this trend and reversed the certification of a class of 1.5 million current and former female Walmart employees. The plaintiffs were alleging that Walmart had systematically discriminated against women in employment. Statistically, women at the company are paid less and promoted less often. A lower court had found that the plaintiffs met the criteria for a class. The plaintiffs were so numerous as to make joining all of them impracticable. All individual complaints had common questions of law or fact. The named persons were typical of all class members, and the named persons' claims adequately reflected the other claims. Though all the Supreme Court justices agreed that the class suffered from another correctable procedural error, the majority went further and held that the employees did not have common questions of law or fact. To the plaintiffs, the common question was whether Walmart's policy of leaving most hiring and payment decisions to local management's discretion had a discriminatory impact. To the majority, however, there was no common question because Walmart's non-policy was not a policy. The majority reasoned that for each plaintiff, the court would have to consider the policies of the particular store, and each manager would have different reasons for specific hiring decisions. Company-wide discrimination suits had gone forth in the past as class actions, but the court determined that these cases had more significant evidence of a discriminatory company-wide policy. The opinion made no decision on whether the claims were meritorious, and of course these claims can still go forward as individual actions, perhaps joined together with other named plaintiffs. Had the class been certified, however, Walmart would have had a huge incentive to settle early, as any possible judgment would have been multiplied by 1.5 million. Now, the nation's largest private employer knows that few potential plaintiffs will find an attorney who will choose to enter into a costly battle over a pay differential of less than $2 an hour, multiplied by one. This is Christine Hurt.